Thank you, Pastor Dad. When I arrived at Starville, there was a big question what everybody should call me, because he was pastor and I was pastor, and so we've moved him to the more senior status of Pastor Dad now when he comes back. It was May 6, 2011. And we had flown in from China for an exciting event. My daughters were graduating from college. And that is an exciting thing for any parent, because there has been 21 years of continuous payments and cash flows that go out. And there was intense excitement for my daughters to be through school. But I was excited. I was really excited. They were all dressed in green, signifying the color of dollars that were sent for that education. I was excited, but I wasn't prepared. I woke up in the middle of the night in a panic, weeping. I was freaking out. How many of you enjoy freaking out? I was freaking out so much, I woke my wife up. If there's one thing that's worse than freaking out, it's waking your wife up when you're freaking out. And I was struck in the middle of the night that a 21-year cycle was coming to an end for me in many ways. My daughters did what they were supposed to do. They were graduating. They were getting jobs. But my influence was changing. And that was scary. That sort of change is frightening for every one of us. Whenever there's that threat that our influence is going down. Have you felt that before? Their world was different than mine. They text messaged over 100 times a day. That wasn't my world. They were on Facebook, connected with thousands of friends around the world that I didn't even want to keep track of those. And yet that was a part of who they were. Their space was well connected, but it wasn't my world. And I felt that change. And that change was shocking, and it was a little bit frightful. The impact I had on their generation, I realized, was changing very rapidly. But I realized they had a call to their generation. It was different than my call. The Lord was calling them in a certain way, beckoning them, but it was different than me because they lived in a very different world than I lived in. They reached out to friends in different ways than I did. But the Lord was stirring me, and He still continues to stir me, about the need to reach into the next generations. And how are we to do that? How are we to make those connections? Because the reality is, it's a different world out there, isn't it? It's a very different culture. And how are we supposed to do that? How do we approach this? Now, in one way, I'd say the next generation, but I just say the world in general. It's a different place now today than what I think it should be. But the Lord wants us to reach into it with connections that they will understand for His purposes. If you'd like to open your Bibles to John chapter 4, you can open them one time and just stay in that chapter. All the verses are not going to be on the overhead, so you're going to be forced to look at me a little bit during this. But John chapter 4, we see Jesus approaching a very similar situation. The culture where he was headed into was different than what he was used to. It was very different. In John chapter 4 and verse 5, it says, "So he came down to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey," he was on jet lag too, apparently, "was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to the well to draw water. Jesus said to her, 'Give me a drink, for his disciples had gone away to the city to buy food. The Samaritan said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying it to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked, and he would have given you living water." Now we look at this story, and it's unusual at best. He's meeting with this woman, and she even says up front, "Why are you talking to me? You're not supposed to be talking to me. We're from different backgrounds. We can't relate together. You're not a friend in my Facebook page. And none of my friends are your friends. We don't have, you know, three or four friends that are the same. We're just not friends. We're not connected." Yet, he got into her space, didn't he? He went to where she was. I'd like to look at five things that Jesus did to approach the culture of his day. Now, what Pastor Karen was just talking about is a reality. There is a different culture all around us, isn't there? Are we supposed to interact with that culture? My argument would be, yes, definitely. We're not supposed to be part of the culture, but we're supposed to interact with the culture. Jesus went to this woman. That was a strange thing. It seemed out of place. But he went where? To where she lived. If he would have gone to the synagogue in the area and waited for her to show up, do you think she would have come? It wouldn't have happened. Maybe we could liken it to the YMCA that we just heard about, where he went, where she was hanging out. He went. First, the first thing Jesus did is he had a go strategy. He went to the woman. He went to the well. He asked her for a drink. He initiated the interaction. This was an unusual situation for him to do. In fact, once again, she questioned, said, "Why are you even talking to me?" He went into her space. In some ways, he almost had the attitude that he was going to compel her. He was going to force action. I remember Pastor Bailey telling a story years ago of when he was young, and I could picture this happening. He said there were revival meetings happening at the church where he was as a younger man. He said kids would be out in the street creating a hassle and so forth for some of the people coming in. He said so some of the younger youth group members would go out and they start talking to him and they grab him by the arm and walk him into church and take him in. They compelled them. They got in their face and made their life part of everyone else's. The great command was to go into all the world. We have got to have a go strategy, not a build strategy. Now, I'm at Starville, and kind of when I had the attitude, it was like, well, I got to build things up here. I need a new voice for this generation, and things have to build. And I'm seeing a build strategy is not what's necessary. It's really a go strategy. I 2 weeks ago was with a pastor who did his PhD in church growth strategies. And I thought, wow, that's impressive. And he was talking to me. He says, "Yeah, well, I did all that studying and I became a pastor. And after the first year, I began to ask the Lord why these strategies weren't working." And the Lord said, "Well, there's that verse." And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "I said, I'll build my church." And he said, "Your job is to go. I told you to go, not to build, but to go." And we need to have a go strategy. We're many times focused on trying to build our church or trying to preserve our church, maybe even. But the Lord wants us not to have that build strategy, but a go strategy, because that was his command to us. It was to go. It was to go. Zion Fellowship has certainly had this go strategy from the very beginning. If you just log the travel hours of the front row today, it's obvious our leadership has had a go strategy. Couldn't you agree with that? A go strategy. The problem is the current culture requires a different go strategy than maybe we have practiced in the past. The question is, how are we to do that? How are we to do that? Where is the well that we need to go to where people are living? We need to have a go strategy. Second, if we're going to have a go strategy, we must go where the current generation is. We must go where they are. We must be where they live. In the last 2 weeks, I was in China, Hong Kong, Indonesia, and Singapore, and nearly everywhere I went, I would introduce myself to people. They'd say, great, nice to know you. And one of the first questions they asked was, what is your WhatsApp number? And I honestly was shocked at this. I didn't really even know what WhatsApp was. I could give them an email address, I could give them my phone number, and when I offered those two things, it just didn't connect. And when I said I don't have a WhatsApp, it's like, oh. And then things just ended, and they wanted to introduce me to somebody else. I realized in those countries, WhatsApp was where they were living. And when I talked to them, when I began discussing that with them, I said, how much of your day are you spending in this app communicating with other people? And they said, well, probably most of our day. That's actually how we communicate. That is where they're living. To be at their well means to be connected to that, and quite frankly, it's not something that I totally understand or I'm comfortable to, but as soon as I WeChatted my daughter about this, she said, oh yeah, for that part of the world, that's important. You need to be there, Dad. That's the space. These are the spaces where people are living. If we have a message that needs to be given to them, we've got to find those spaces, those wells where they draw from every day, where they're at, and present the message that God has given us, because that's their space. That's where they're living. They're living in those places. Where are those places today? It's in social networking, it's in media. And we can look at those things and say, well, that's just kind of a waste of time. And quite frankly, if we use it the way that many times they're used, it is a waste of time. But maybe these are the spaces where people are actually living. Maybe the connections that we need to be making are actually in these places, and we're overlooking them, waiting inside the church for them to come, when we need to be at that well, at that place. You know, it's interesting to note that in past revivals, much of the revivals that took place focused on the youth and on the younger. It seems like that in many ways during revival, God wipes out entire generations and kind of pushes them to the side, almost, and goes directly to the age group that's going to respond to him. During the First Great Awakening, Jonathan Edwards wrote this, "The revival has been chiefly among the young." In 1859, during the Great Welsh Revival, one witness said this, "One of the most striking characteristics of the movement was its effect on young people and even on children. The youth of our congregations were nearly all subjects of deep religious impressions. Very young people, children from age 10 to 14, gather together to hold prayer meetings, and they pray very fervently. In many places, the young people hold a prayer meeting of their own, and these sometimes proved instrumental in bringing the powerful influences of the revival to that particular locality. The majority of all converts of the revival are young people." But where are those young people? I'm concerned because, well, there's not many of them here this morning. Where is their life? Where is the watering hole that they're at? And how can we be in that place to see a message of life brought to them? Their lives are not being lived around the church, and as has been historical for many decades, was the case. The church was the center of a lot of social life, but it's not. Now, what are we supposed to do with this? God's blessed some in our fellowship with the ability to communicate, to reach out, to touch others, and we're certainly called to be a teaching fellowship. Don't you agree with that? That's been said over and over this week. It's been said over and over for at least 3 decades here. But how is that to be implemented for a younger generation? A younger generation. We're well connected with Facebook, and we send pictures back and forth of each other, mock each other a little bit on it, get angry about some of the posts and some of the things happening out there. But are these tools really being used as the teaching platform for where people are living? I'm wanting to encourage us today that we have a calling as a fellowship, and we're overlooking opportunities that are right in front of us where the Lord wants us to be at the well where people are living, reaching them with the message that He's given us. So Jesus had this go strategy. Also, Jesus focused on answers. He didn't focus on the problems. He focused on answers. In verse 10, Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying it to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep." What was the problem? He didn't have a pitcher. But that wasn't the real problem, was it? But he focused right on the solution. He's like, "I got water. I have what you need." He focused down on the solution to what was really needed. So many times we, the church, become angry and frustrated with the way the world's going. And there's no question, it's headed the wrong way. But we need to focus on the answers. The answers. Not allowing ourselves just to spin down in this cycle of being angry about what's going on. There's a lot of anger in the world today, isn't there? Just watch what's going on in the politics, and you have angry people on every side throwing stuff at each other. And if some of them get elected, they might throw bombs at each other even. But what is our response supposed to be in all of that? We can get caught up in that same spirit and just become angry about what's happening. And in our righteous indignation, just be angry and say, "God's just going to bring judgment." And that is true. But Jesus didn't do that in the conversation with the woman, did he? He simply said, "I have water and you want it, don't you?" He came to her with that life. He came to her with life. He had the ghost answer. He came to her with answers, not problems. Third, Jesus gave hope and life. His method was one of focusing in on hope and life in the situation. He focused on answers, not problems. He called things the way they were. I mean, a little bit later in these verses, he points out some failures in her life. And you know what? He just says, "I've got water." He gave her answers that were meaningful of hope and life. In Mark chapter 10, verses 13 through 16, we see Jesus dealing with another group, reaching out to another cultural group. In verse 13 of Mark chapter 10, it says, "And they were bringing children to him that he might touch them, and the disciples rebuked them. But when Jesus saw it, he was indignant and said to them, 'Let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of God. Truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child shall not enter it. And he took them in his arms and blessed them and laying his hands on them. It's interesting how he responded to the youth, how he was reaching out to this cultural group. He basically did two things. In the last verse here, it says he blessed them. He blessed them. That word blessed there could be translated, he praised them. He spoke positive words to them. He praised them. He built them up. The second thing it says he did was he laid his hands on them, and that conveys the concept of he brought comfort to them. Comfort and blessing. So much of what's out in the world today has nothing to do with comfort and blessing. But there is a fact that the younger generation is starved for that comfort and blessing. They're looking for it in the wrong ways, but the reality is what they're finding is just more violence. They're finding wickedness that wants to destroy them, and they're not able to experience that real peace and that real comfort that is necessary. How did Jesus appeal to them? With comfort and with peace. He offered peace, real peace, not peace that says everything is all right the way it is, not peace that said just do your own thing, but peace that said, I have living water. I have living water that will satisfy. He had a go strategy. He focused on answers, not problems. He gave hope and life. Number four, he didn't change who he was or who he was called to be to meet the need of the woman at the well. There's a tendency for all of us to try and change who we are to try and identify with other people. And that's wrong. It's not a biblical concept. We're not of, but sent to the world. In John 18:36, it says, Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world. Not in this world. It means that we're sent into the world, but we're not, when we come out of it, to bring it out with the person. We're to go there, we're to go to that place, to that watering hole, to meet at that place. But we're not to change who we are in order to do that. Jesus didn't lower his standards one bit by going to the well, did he? He didn't change who he was. His message didn't change. But he simply said, I've got water that you're looking for. He brought that life. He brought that peace. We can't use the world's tactics to reach the world. We are Zion, and the Lord's given us a specific vision, a specific calling. I could even say a specific way of doing things, and that can't be compromised. And it can't be sold at all. But that doesn't change the fact that we've got to go to the well. We've got to go to the well where the needs are. Finally, in conclusion, the fifth thing, Jesus moved right to worship. He moved right to worship with her. He began to talk with her about issues of worship. Now, at first, she thought he was referring to a place of where you were supposed to go. And he said, no, worship has to be done in spirit and in truth. It's not about a location. It's about being guided by the one who is truth, isn't it? In John chapter 16 and verse 13, it says, when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into the truth, for he will not speak on his own authority. But whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. So my question is, are you being guided by the truth? Now, there's a tendency when we're guided by the truth to kind of focus inward and to build turrets on the corner of our life to protect it and keep the truth in, that it can stay right and it can stay in its own entity. But the problem is, we've been called to go. We've been called to go. We've been called to go to the well. To go to the well. Where is the well in your community? Have you been at that well recently? Now, maybe it's a social network. If you're 13 to 26, it's going to be a social network. But if you're not, it's going to be different for you. I was speaking to a pastor in Indonesia, and I was sharing some of these concepts there. And he said, well, I actually work in a village area. And we were talking about games and activities and things that reach his community where the children were at, the spaces they are in. And I don't think it's about doing one thing or another. We have this tendency of saying, well, if I can just do these seven things, it's going to work. That's not the point. The point is, we need to find the well. Find the well where people are. We have been given a message. The world needs that message. It's a message of peace and hope. Are we going to pour that out? Or are we going to hold it? There's also a tendency to think, well, it's easier to do it in other places. I can promise you, in China, it's easier to evangelize today than it is in America. You can talk to somebody just over lunch for the first time, and they'll want to talk about the Lord, even if they're not a Christian. They're curious about it. There's an openness. That's not the case in my home country any longer. But I think we've got to find where the wells are. Where are those wells? We have to have a go strategy, and I want to encourage every one of us, that's not just for those who are going out and teaching in Zion Bible schools. If you've received the teaching that the Lord has for you here, you need to be using that at the well that you're at every day. Because all of us are interacting in different places, and if we're not at those wells offering water, where are we? What are we doing? We've got to have that go strategy. A go strategy of where people are with the message, the burden that God has given us. Also, we've got to use the methods that Jesus used. Once again, focus. He praised, he edified, and he brought comfort. He brought peace in the middle of turmoil. We have a heritage at Zion Fellowship. I can say with confidence, the front row down there has done it well. They've done it with honor. But they're not my daughter's generation. I'm not my daughter's generation. Or the generation after that. Here at Zion, we have four generations in our congregations now. We've got to have a new message. Not a new message, but a new way of reaching with that message. To go to the well. Let's go to the well. Amen.